This is Orson Welles, speaking from London.
To keep you in suspense.
I had a be everyday grind.
Night transmissions. Hello, this is Gary Clinton again with Night Transmissions, our weekly trip into the archives of old radio, hunting mostly for the different, the weird, the strange. Yeah, maybe I'm a little perverse. I don't know. I've never really been scared by any movie I've seen, any book I've read, any radio play I've heard, any television show I've seen. Well, there's one exception to that, and maybe I'll go into that sometime. My own reaction has always been one of amusement more than anything else. I can remember people talking about how scary The X-Files was. I didn't watch The X-Files because I thought it was scary. I thought it was immensely entertaining and a bit cheesy. And that's what I thought of the old science fiction movies in the 50s. Well, with a couple of exceptions. There were a couple of good ones. Forbidden Planet, The Day the Earth Stood Still, The Silent Earth, a couple of others. For the most part, though, they were just low-rent and cheesy and entertaining in their own way. But scary? Nah, never scary. Now, the slasher movies, when they came along, they didn't really scare me. They just disgusted me. I'm sorry. I just don't see anything entertaining about watching people being disemboweled. And no, I never bought into it. I can be quite queasy when it comes to blood and gore in real life, but in the movies, I just kind of look at it and think, oh, well, that's a pretty good special effect, or well, that really stinks. Anyway, maybe that's why I like the radio, this old radio stuff, where everything's in your mind. And is as convincing or unconvincing as you make it. Anyway, our first effort tonight is going to be from a highly regarded Arch Obler series, Lights Out. This particular episode was originally shown on August the 5th of 1936. Think about that, 1936. Geez, that was before I was born. About 10 years before I was born. Yeah, I know, I'm old. Some of you, though, are even older. Here we go.
Lights out, everybody. It is later than you think. This is Arch Obler bringing you another in our series of stories of the unusual. And once again, we caution you, these lights-out stories are definitely not for the timid soul. So we tell you calmly and very sincerely, if you frighten easily, turn off your radio now.
$0.02, $0.03, $0.04. 5 cents, 6 cents, 7 cents, $2, $3, $4, $5, $6, $2 billion, $3 million, $4 million, $5 million, $6 million.
Today, money.
What are you talking about?
Say, look, Tony, ain't that the pretty boat?
Yeah, the devil with the boat. What do you say about money?
Hey, you said that money was what was wrong with the world. Fellers get a lot of money, and then they want more of it. They get that, and they want more, and pretty soon that's all they think about is money, money, money.
Yeah. What do you think about it?
Money.
So what are you talking about?
You don't understand, Tony.
Yeah, you don't understand yourself. All the time you talk. Go away, let me alone.
No, no, Tony, don't get sore, eh? That's only talking.
Yeah, that's what's wrong. It don't make no sense. Money's what's wrong with the world. You fool, you crazy in the head.
No, by Jiminy, I ain't crazy. I tell you, it ain't right. A man who works hard with his hands and don't think about money all the time can't have what he want to have.
What do you want to have, eh?
A farm, Tony. A little farm.
What do you say?
A little stock farm, someplace good, like Wisconsin or maybe Minnesota.
Wisconsin.
I say something funny, maybe.
A farm. That's funny.
It's not funny. For 13 years, I work on the ship, and I save my money for farm. I don't like the money. I just want a farm for my wife and my kids. And then...
Yeah, I know. Then in 29, the bank, she's go bust and you back where you start. Eh, actually?
Yeah, I tell you, Tony, it ain't right. I work so hard, and my wife and my kids. They wait for me to bring the money to buy the farm so we could all be together.
Oh, shut up. I don't know why smart a guy like me waste time with a dumbbell like you. Just because I work on the same ship with you don't mean I gotta listen to you shut up your mouth all the time.
But I work so hard.
So what? Your work will make mine rich. It's a break. Yeah, a break. Oh, I'm the best deep water diver in the whole Pacific. So what? Never get a break, so I'm still eating a ship, a slap, and a walk in the docks.
Yeah, Tony, that's what I say. Someday, when a man works hard...
Oh, shut up. You don't know what you talk about. You gotta get a dough, big dough. And you can't get a big dough with work. Someday, the break, she's gonna come my way. And then Tony's gonna be a big shot. Tony ain't gonna take nothing from nobody. I'll grab that dough any way I can get it.
No, Tony. Money, but ain't honest, don't make a feller happy.
Now, you lunkhead. Telling you when I get a chance, I'm gonna get that dough if I have to make the devil my brother. I tell you
what. All right, sailors, move on, move on. No bumming around the dock.
Yeah, yeah, officer, we go.
Fat belly.
What's that? What's that you said?
No, officer, he don't say nothing. That is Mr. Tony, officer. He's the best deep water diver in the whole Pacific.
Yeah? Well, if he said what I think he did, he's going to be doing all his diving in the can for about 30 minutes.
No, believe me, officer. Tony, he don't mean nothing what he says. He's a good man.
Shut up and get out of here, the both of you.
Come on, Tony.
And tell that big mouth diver friend of yours to get a job and dive out of town or I'll run him in.
And cut out his heart.
No, Tony, please. Come this way. We don't want no trouble.
Shoving me around. Me, Tony. Best man we ever put on a diving rig.
We go have something to eat, eh?
Shoving me around. Yeah. Money, she don't make no difference, eh?
But I didn't say that, Tony. I said that work.
Well, the devil will work. Money, that's what you gotta get. Any old way but get it. Gary and you, they eat out your hand. They kiss your feet.
Come on, Tony, in here. We get a cup of coffee.
That's what they say, dog eat dog. I'm telling you, sweet, me, I'm going to be the big dog and tell them what to do.
Yeah, sure. Come on in, I pay. It's nice and warm.
Dump.
What are you going to have, boys?
Two cups of coffee.
Well, maybe you like soups, eh? I got a nice hot soup.
No, we just want coffee, please.
And get the lead out of your pants.
Okay. Two coffees.
So what do you want to do for us? Get the farm, eh, sweet?
Yeah, my wife, she wants...
Who cares about your wife? The farm.
For 13 years, I've
okay,
worked...
Okay, here you are, boys. Nice coffee. There you are. 10 cents, please.
Yeah.
Yeah, coffee is good when you're cold, eh?
Yeah.
You know, that guy was winning. He don't drink coffee tonight, I bet you, eh?
What guy?
Well, the guy was winning the sweeping stakes. You know, the seller sweeping stakes. What's the matter? Don't you hear it?
Yes, well, so what's this guy blowing about?
Well, I'm telling you. The seller sweeping stakes. Everybody is buying tickets. $3,000 first prize, you betcha. He's in the papers. He's winning. Yeah, boy, he's lucky guy.
So who cares? Give me some more coffee.
Okay.
No, wait a minute, mister.
Yeah?
This fella that won, you say his name is in the paper?
Oh, yeah, sure. Here, I got the paper here.
Get my coffee.
No, wait, Tony. I want to hear. Read it, mister.
Okay. He say a winner, first prize is somebody who give the name of farmer.
Farmer. That's smart, Swens.
Tony, quick. Where is he?
Hey, that's my paper. Hey,
Tony, come on, quick, come on.
Hey, crazy square hat, wait for me. That's wait, you crazy fool. That's my... Where you go?
Tony, listen, it's me, me.
Me what? What it say?
Former, that's the name I gave the man when I bought a ticket. I'm rich, Tony, I can get the farm.
Yeah. You mean you?
Yeah.
What he says in there, you?
Yeah, Tony, me. I buy sweepstakes ticket long time ago. I win. Yeah.
Crazy night.
No, no, I tell you, I win. Look, former, that's me. Tony, me. Oh, my wife, my kids, they'd be so happy. So happy.
No, wait. You ain't right.
Huh?
I mean, look, it's a given number here.
Yeah.
Ticket number is 6933. You got that number?
Yeah, I give name former. I know I did.
But the ticket, where's the ticket?
Yeah.
You don't get a money without the ticket.
Yeah, here. I put it in my pocket. No, she's not there. Wait.
Hold your pockets. Put them out. If you lost it, I'm a
good. No, I got it here. I got it, Tony.
Let me see.
No, please. 13 years, I've
been. It's Mario. I ain't going to hold it. I just want to look.
Look. 6933. You just like I say in the paper.
Yeah. You?
Yeah.
You did win.
Yeah, Tony, I win me. Oh, my honor. $3,000 and we wait so long.
$3,000.
I quit to see, Tony. By form. Oh, my honor, my kids and me, we be the happiest people in the whole world.
$3,000.
I buy the best farm in old Minnesota. Come on, Tony, I go get my money.
No, wait.
Huh?
Don't go now. It's pretty late.
But my money.
But no, I tell you, they be cross now. You better wait tomorrow.
No, I can't wait. 14 years I wait. I got to get money.
But they're going to be close, I tell you. Now, come on. We go on down dock and see what is the first boat.
Boat?
So right away tomorrow, quick. When you get a door for the ticket, you catch a boat to home to the wife and the kids.
Yeah.
That'd be good, eh?
Oh, yeah, Tony, yeah. Oh, my friend, I'm going to be so happy. All my life I've worked so hard. And now... $3,000.
$3,000.
Tony, I give you what you need, Tony. You are my friend. I want you to have something, too.
Yeah, well, come on. Let's get down to the dock.
Yeah, sure, Tony. Anything you say. We go look at the ships in the water. When I get my farm, I won't get to seeing such things again, eh, Tony?
Yeah, no, of course not.
That policeman, I wish we meet him now, huh, Tony?
Huh? Well, what's the matter? Why you want the cop?
I'll show him we ain't no bombs anymore. $3,000 this ticket is worth. By Yemeni, a man's no bomb with $3,000.
No, you bet your life is not.
Ah, the water, she look pretty.
Yeah. She's deep right here.
I don't care how deep the water is, as long as I'm on top.
You swim?
No, that's a funny thing, ain't it?
Yeah.
14 years a sailor and I couldn't swim. Well, there's plenty of other fellas like me. And anyway, the man, he don't have to know how to swim to work a farm.
Oh, that water, she's so dark and pretty. Swenson.
Yeah?
Let me look at the ticket.
Take it?
Here's Sweepstakes.
Oh, by Jiminy, you think maybe she ain't good, Tony, huh?
Yeah.
I know she's good. Right away, when I heard that fella say the former win, I know that's me. Hey, Tony, there it is. See, it's a former on it. That's me, see?
Lean over it a bit there. I can't see.
Yeah, something. Sure. You see the numbers? It says 6, 9... Tony. Tony, you...
Tony, what? My knife is shot you up good, my Swanson. So you can swim, eh, Squad? Well, thank you first and last. There. Hey, wait, Swanson. You forgot the sweepstakes ticket. Okay, I collect for you, farmer. $3,000. At last, I get a break.
Plenty of dough and a hot spend it, huh, boys?
All right.
You can make a fool of some noise.
We'll wake up the bride, eh, Tony?
Yeah, don't you worry about the bride.
Tony, it's all right, eh?
So now you go home and let me go upstairs, eh? And maybe tomorrow night we go have some more fun, eh?
Donnie's a great guy now, eh? Sure, I'm a great guy. Everybody knows Tony's a great guy. Where stays?
Tony, is that you?
Smarty, waiting for somebody else?
Oh, Tony, I've been waiting for you. Let me help you.
Hey, go away. Don't need no help. Not me.
Oh, Tony, night after night. Oh,
go away. Me, I'm all right. Great guy, that's me.
You're spending all your money on those drunken fools. Yeah,
shut up your mouth.
Oh, careful.
I told you I don't need no help from nobody. Tony, he takes what he wants. Shut the door.
Yeah.
Now come here and give a great guy a kiss.
No, I...
Come here, you come.
No, wait, Tony, listen.
No, I listen to nothing.
But, Tony, the man said that...
Man? What man?
The man that was here. He's been here a dozen times since midnight looking for you.
Midnight? Who was he? What did he want?
I don't know. He wanted you. Oh, Tony, I was so afraid.
Afraid? Why was you afraid?
Well,
answer me. Why was you afraid?
Well, he was so strange. He acted so funny.
What you mean, funny?
Well, he spoke so funny. As if...
As if what?
Well, as if his mouth was full of water.
You try to make a joke with Tony, eh?
No, Tony, no. I'm not fooling. Really, I'm not. He said that...
He said something?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to tell you. He said, tell him...
Well, what did he say?
Well, I couldn't hardly understand him. He talked so funny. But I think he said, tell him I was here. And then I think he said, the farmer.
The farmer?
Yeah, that's what he... Tony, what's the matter?
What he looks like?
What's the matter, Tony?
What he looks like?
Well, he was tall, and he looked like a sailor, and I think his clothes were wet. Oh, Tony, that's him again. That's the way he knocked before.
No.
Tony, what is it? You answer the door. I'm scared, Tony. You answer. You tell him to go away. Tony, don't stand there staring at the door like that. You're scaring me. Don't do it.
You go away. You're dead.
What?
Dead. You hear me? Dead. I killed you 6 months ago today.
Oh, Tony, no.
I throw you in the water 1,000 miles from here. You're dead. Dead.
Tony.
Scare my wife, but you don't scare me. You found with you, I kill you again.
No, Tony, don't.
Swanson, go away from the door. Shoot. Connie. I don't want to shoot you. Shoot him through the door. Connie, get up. Connie.
Open up. Open up in there now. Open up.
Connie, I don't want to kill you. What's him, Connie? Him.
Open up now. Open up. It's the police.
You, Swanson, you. You think you got me, eh? You think you got me in a hot seat, eh? No, not me, Swanson. You square head. You forget the fire escape.
Stop it. Come back here. I'll shoot you. Stop.
Listen, Mike. You gotta help me. You gotta.
Oh, take it easy, Tony. Take it easy.
Every cop in the town, he shoots me down like a dog.
Well, you killed one of them. What do you expect?
I kill them all. Nobody can stop me. Nobody. Oh, Mikey. You're my friend. You gotta get me out of town.
How much dough you got?
I got nothing.
You're lying your teeth. You won the sweepstakes in Frisco, didn't you?
Sure, but I'm going to tell you, Mike.
No. Listen to me, cop killer. They got every road, every depot, every dock in this town covered. If it's free you want to get, then it's money it's going to cost you. Every cent you got.
You'll get me out?
So far out, there ain't a cop in the world can get you. Listen, at midnight tonight, the SS Provis is pulling out to go down through the canal and then over to the coast of Ireland to go hunting for gold.
Gold? You're crazy.
Watch your tongue, me bucko. Gold, I said, and gold it is. Only they're going under the sea for it.
What?
You heard me. Under the sea. $1 million in gold in the hold of the Tanya, sunk by a sub. And these boys are going there to dive for it.
Dive?
Yeah.
And if you decorate the mahogany in front of me with every cent you got in your pocket, you'll be on board that ship.
You hear that, Swenson? You're diving for gold. $1 million. And me, I'm going to be on the board.
Talk to me, Captain?
Yeah, Tony. Sit down.
She's getting pretty rough outside, eh, Captain?
Yeah. That's what I wanted to talk to you about.
Yeah, I'm listening.
While you were sleeping before, the rest of the divers had a meeting.
Yeah?
Yeah. They looked over the weather reports and they decided they ain't gonna do no more diving. The white-bellied lock.
Wait a minute, Captain. You mean we're gonna turn it back here?
Well, what else can I do? 3 months out here in the open sea. And when we finally do locate the wreck, every mother's son of them turns chicken on me.
So what's the matter? You want to talk to me?
Because even if you are a no good rat, you're the best diver of the lot.
You keep talking.
Tony, listen. Under that buoy off the starboard, there's the Tanya with $1 million in gold bullion in it.
So?
Go down and get your hooks into it, Tony. And whatever you get, half of it's yours.
You mean half?
Sure. You get half. And I'll split the other half with the crew.
$1 million?
Yeah, Tony, $1 million. And you'll have half of it. You can do it, Tony. You can do it. I know you can.
See, she's getting rough.
But you never get the bends. They tell me you've gone down in rougher water.
Yeah, but that water, she's cold. Half an hour, I'm a finish. In that room with the gold, who knows where she is?
Tony, listen. I know just where that gold is stored.
You kind of fool me, eh?
No, as God is my judge, I'm telling you the truth. Jake located the room on his last dive yesterday. He told me, only me, about it.
So?
Don't you see, Tony, it's the chance of a lifetime. I got coal enough for one more day out here. If we turn back, we'll never locate the wreck again the way that sea's running. $500,000 in gold for you, Tony, right under your feet. Don't be a fool, man. Take a chance and go down and try to get it. And if you win, you've got the world right in your hand, Tony. Well, will you do it?
I'll get away from him.
Huh? Him? Who are you talking about?
Who's talking to you? What are you sitting there for? Get me a rig. Get the Ponce gone.
I told you to keep the deck clear. Only the men I want. The rest to go below, or I don't die.
All right, Tony. All right, you men. Get below. Every white man, one of you.
Hey, hold up the helmet. I want to try out the phone.
Hello, hello, hello. Well, why don't you answer me?
Okay, Tony, I hear you okay.
Where's the bounce? Okay, I'm ready. Put the helmet on me.
Okay.
Hurry up, your marks. Hey, get them ports tied. You think I got all day?
All set, Tony.
Okay, put them over the side. Watch that pump. I'll come up and cut your heart out.
$500,000. Me. Work coal. Down. Down. $500,000.
All right, Tony?
Sure, I'm all right. Let me alone.
Okay.
Down. Down. Work dark. He came to me, Tony. Best diver. 50-50. Half a million.
Listen up there. I'm on the bottom. You hear me?
Tony, listen. Captain says hurry up. Squall coming up.
Tell the captain if he take me off before I give a signal, I cut his heart out.
But Tony...
Shut up and let me alone.
Me. Half a million. Captain said gold was inside door. I bet. Half a million. By the door, the captain said. Me and the captain are 50-50.
Says to leave him alone. He don't want to talk to nobody.
Oh, that no good rat. I was a fool sending him down.
He's on the bottom, all right.
But what's he doing? Has he found the gold? Has he found the strong room? How long is he going to stay down there? Talk to him, Art. Talk to him. Tell him he's got the whip.
Captain said it would be right over the Santa Lucia. Gold. A room full of gold. And rich. All the money in the world. Me, Tony, rich. Rich.
Yeah. All the money you want, eh, Tony?
Who's talking? Me. Who's talking?
What's wrong, Tony? Anything wrong?
You up there. I told you I don't want to talk. So now you're not listening to me. What do you mean, all the money I want? What do you say that for, eh?
I didn't say that, Tony. I've been standing by up here.
Standing by up here? Wait till I get up there, I'll show you standing by. Wait till I get this headset connection with my teeth. I fix you so you don't bother me no more.
No, no. Wait, Tony. The captain says that...
So, now talk. Now talk all you want, you selfish. Me, I won't hear you. Me, I'd be alone with my girl.
No, Tony. Not alone.
You up there. You stop talking to me. Stop it.
I'm down here, Tony. With you.
Who says that? I broke the next. Nobody can talk to me. Nobody.
I will talk to you, Tony. I got much to talk to you.
It's in my head. That's what it is. In my head.
Not in your head. Look. Look straight ahead.
Squinch.
You know me, Tony? Me in the water almost a year?
No. No.
Close to the window in your helmet.
Oh.
You don't like what you see, eh, Tony? My wife. My children. They wouldn't like it either, would they, Tony?
Away. Go away.
No. Don't stay and hurry, Tony. We got plenty of time. Plenty. I worked for 13 years. You remember, Tony? 13 years for farm. Now I don't work no more. I used to wait for you. You.
My heir. My heir.
You take away my wife, my kids, my life. Now I take the lair, eh, Tony? You sure the lair. Now I take off your helmet and come in with you, Tony, my friend. I come in.
No.
Captain, listen.
No.
Take him up, quick. Take him up. His air. Is he getting air?
Yeah, sure, plenty. Everything's okay.
Talk to him, Mark. Talk to him.
He don't answer. Just yelling.
Maury, signal on the lifeline.
He's signaling us, Captain.
What?
Yes, and everything's okay. Wants to be taken out.
But he's yelling, Captain. He's still yelling.
Haul him in quick. Haul him in.
How about the decompression?
No, there's no time. We'll put him in the tank when we get him up. Something must be wrong. Okay. Yelling bloody murder on the phone is signaling okay on the lifeline. Hurry up, you men. Hurry up. Come on. Get him up. Harmon.
Here he comes.
He's not there. It's not him. It's something else on his line.
Captain, look. His airline, it's been chewed through by teeth.
But what is it? What's tied to the lifeline where he was?
Well, it's... Mother in heaven. It's a bar of gold.
It's always later than you think. 1936, 1924, or 2009. It's always later than you think, especially when it's about murder. The next show comes from a 1952 broadcast to the Black Museum, dealing with the very real murder of Emily K. in 1924. It's called the Black Gladstone Bag. What's a Gladstone bag? Think of a small leather suitcase, the kind that opens up flat on a hinge. As you might guess, it was named after the late 19th century, four-time English Prime Minister, William Gladstone. Here we go.
This is Orson Welles, speaking from London. The Black Museum. A repository of death. Here in the grim stone structure on the Thames which houses Scotland Yard is a warehouse of homicide, where everyday objects, a package of cigarettes, a length of string, a linen napkin, all are touched by murder. There's a Gladstone bag. It's a familiar object. Every railroad train carries several, inevitably useful, compact, and expandable. They always hold more than they seem. Perfect for vacation. Perfect also for...
If you look inside, Inspector, just pry the two halves apart at one end, as I did.
Yes, I see. All objects to have in a valise.
Not if one had every intention of disposing of them, Inspector.
Today, that Gladstone bag can be seen in the Black Museum.
From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death, the Black Museum. In just a moment, you will hear The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles. Museum starring Orson Welles.
Well, here we are in the Black Museum, Scotland Yard's mausoleum of murder. There are times, as I open this door, you know, that I feel the old familiar inscription should be carved on the lintel. Abandon hope, all ye who enter here. Yes, abandon hope of peaceful, quiet, dreamless sleep, for within this room is almost every instrument which ever has been used for the commission of the foul deed called murder. Yes, here lies death. No doubt about it, you feel it in the dull, oppressive atmosphere. You see it first marked calmly on the neatly lettered cards. So-and-so died by this instrument at the hands of so-and-so, dated, and so forth. Your glance passes to the thing itself. You almost feel the blood. There's a camera.
So, you think
ordinary
you know...
Ordinary tourist snapshot-taking camera. Yet within the blackness of this box, the film registered two faces. A third person saw a print. And from that recognition, three people died. One by a hangman's rope. There's a briar pipe, well smoked, thoroughly discolored, a pleasure to a pipe smoker, but no pleasure to the man who inhaled hydrocyanic gas with his tobacco. Nor to the killer, trapped by the pipe itself. Ah, here we are, the Gladstone bag. Piece of luggage for a man. It looks so commonplace, so much as if it belonged to a traveling salesman, not to Jim Hudson. Of course, in a way, Jim was a traveling salesman. He certainly had a sales talk, and he was quite successful at it.
Sally, I've never seen you looking lovelier.
Oh, Jimmy, you always do that.
Do what, sweetheart?
Say things like that, just when I want to pick a fight with you. That's one of the reasons I love you so much, despite your wife and everything else.
Everything else?
That's what I wanted to fight with you about. Well, we just can't go on like this, Jimmy, darling.
Why not? We're as happy as circumstances.
Don't you see, Jimmy? A woman wants at least a snatch of domesticity, not just clandestine meetings with the clock ticking away her happiness in the background.
It'll come, darling. It'll come.
The girl was right, of course, from her point of view. Granted that the relationship between her and the man she loved was, well, outside the recognized bounds. Granted that they found each other when it seemed too late. Still, the girl was right. She wanted a certain sense of security which can come to a woman only through the small things of making coffee in the morning while a man was shaving with an earshot. And Sally James was the kind of girl who took action when she wanted something badly enough.
Jim, what about the week we planned together for this spring?
I probably could get away, darling, if we had a place to go.
I have the place. Anyway, the ad about it.
You are something, aren't you?
Here, darling. I found this in the Sunday paper. Go on, read it.
For rent. Bungalow. The beaches. Pevensey Bay, Eastbourne. Reasonable by the week. You've got your heart set on this, haven't you, sweet?
Can we do it?
The week of April 12th. All right?
All right. Oh, Jimmy, it'll be heaven down there by the sea.
Heaven by the sea. Poor girl, one of those human beings who believes with all her heart that dreams can become reality. Perhaps it was just as well that Sally didn't see her Jim some 2 evenings later in a quiet little restaurant not more than 3 blocks from the place she'd given Jim her precious clipping.
Rhoda, my darling, I've never seen you looking lovelier.
Oh, come off it, Jimmy. That kind of romancing just isn't in my style.
You're a woman, aren't you?
Well, you ought to know, Jimmy boy.
And how?
Thanks.
Look, Rhoda, I've taken a cottage at Pevensey Bay.
Oh, how inconvenient to have to travel all that distance.
Not for weekends, it isn't. Inconvenient.
Well, the daring young man on the flying trapeze.
Would you like weekends by the sea, Rhoda?
Why not? I think it'd be fun. Nice place.
Called the Beaches. Old garden, private bathing beach.
Sounds marvelous.
I thought you'd like it.
Well, I can't make it this weekend.
Neither can I. How about the weekend of the 16th? We'd go down Friday afternoon, come back early Monday morning. There's a very early train.
It's a deal, Jim. It really is a deal.
A clever rascal, Jim Hudson, without a doubt. Knows his way with the ladies. But he cuts his margins rather close, doesn't he? Note the dates. April 12th, the week, with Sally. Friday the 16th, with Rhoda. Well, that's hardly a 4 week with Sally. But, of course, Sally doesn't know about this on Friday noon the 9th as she stands in the doorway of the railway carriage in Waterloo Station.
You will be down by Monday, won't you, Jimmy, dear?
Sooner than that, if I can. You know that, darling.
I guess I feel like a little girl on her first trip alone.
I'm sorry it has to be this way.
Oh, I don't mind, really. I'll have a chance to put the cottage in shape. Have it all clean and comfortable for my man.
When I saw it, there weren't any tools there. And there's always something to fix. I'd better add tools to my shopping list.
Oh, and don't forget the travelling hour you're after for, dear. And please hurry to get down. And... oh, kiss me. Quick, Jimmy, the train's leaving. Oh, Jimmy, dearest. Bye, darling. See you Monday.
Monday it'll be. Take care, darling. Take care.
Watch him as he walks up the platform. The train is already disappearing from the track. Jim has his hands in his pockets. He's whistling merrily, a man with nothing on his mind except his love affair and the prospect of the week ahead. He leaves the station, walks up the street a ways, pauses before a hard wish. What was it he added to his shopping list? Oh, yes. Tools. He enters the shop.
May I assist you, sir?
Yes, yes, I think you can.
What do you wish?
You've got some fine-looking knives in the window. May I see them?
Any particular blade size, sir?
I think, yes, yes, the 10-inch carver will be about right.
Very well, sir. There we are, sir. Best Sheffield steel, hollow ground, razor sharp, and guaranteed to hold temper. It will take very little honing to keep the edge, sir.
Very efficient looking.
Do you prefer the bone or the plastic handle?
Bone, I think.
Very good, sir. Is there anything else?
I think, yes, sir. A small cross-cut saw.
Small, about 18 inches.
Perfect.
Excellent quality, as you can hear.
Good. Would you wrap them, please?
Then that will be 6 and 4, sir. I'll just make up the slip. You'll have your package in a moment.
Jim Hudson took his package on the train with him on Monday morning. And tea time at the Beaches, Pevensey Bay, promised to be exciting. And wonderful.
Isn't this wonderful, Jimmy? I discovered the pastures at the top of the cliff on Sunday. Oh, Jimmy, it's paradise.
It is a nice view.
And so alone, so private. This is our private view, darling. It's like a honeymoon.
You are a sweet little thing, Sally. Very sweet.
I know. When you call me sweet, you think of me as a child. But I love you as a woman, Jimmy.
I know. Shall we go back now? It looks like it may kick up a storm.
If you want to, darling. Whatever you want.
Whatever he wants, Sally. But does he know what he wants, this man with a wife in London, you at the Beaches, and still a third woman waiting to join him just 4 days from now?
It's too bad the beach isn't sand.
Oh, I don't know. Shale isn't bad. Funny about this place.
Funny? How, darling?
Do you remember the Doris Clark case?
Who was she?
She's the reason the Beaches was available.
I don't understand.
She lived here. Two men she knew came down. She was beaten, buried alive in the shale. The men hung.
How horrible.
They made a lot of mistakes, or they mightn't have been caught. People shy away from a house with that kind of a story.
I don't care. We'll change its reputation, then, with our love. Let's go inside, dear. It's getting chilly with the sun gone and the storm coming up.
The storm came. The rain pounded on the roof. The wind lashed at the sea. And within the cottage called the Beeches, all was snug and warm.
I love a fire in a fireplace. Don't you, Jimmy, darling?
Yes, I suppose I do.
Oh, Jim. Am I being too sticky? Sentimental?
Trifle.
What's wrong, Jimmy? You've been, well, far away today.
Sally, let's face it. Things like this never go on for long.
Jim! Jimmy, I don't believe you said that.
I did say it. I mean it.
Then why did you bring me down here?
It was your idea. I went along with it, hoping we could work something out.
Work it out? It's past the... You never loved me.
Stop crying. Can't stand crying.
I ruined my life for you. Now you want to just forget about me.
Stop it. Go on. You can't be infantile forever.
You want your cake and to have it too. You want your wife and other women. You won't. I won't let you.
Stop it, Sally. I told you to stop it.
No. No, I didn't mean it. I'll do whatever you want. I'll go away and never see you again. Jim, don't touch me. Oh, Jim, please. Jim. Jimmy.
The scene was set, save for one vital piece of evidence. A black Gladstone bag, which can be seen today in the Black Museum.
In just a moment, we will continue with The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles. We continue with The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles.
Friday, the 16th of April, dawned fine and clear. A calm, gay Jim Hudson made his way, whistling as usual, through the weekend-bound crowds of Waterloo Station.
Well, here you are, my good man.
Glad you think I'm a good man. I am.
Well, I think you are. By Monday morning, I'll know.
Then let's make that train, baby. Pevensey Bay on number 7.
The train to Pevensey Bay was none too fast for Jim and Rhoda. It was a fine spring day. It's a beautiful spring evening. Moonlight made the rollers on the beach gleam with a lovely phosphorescence. On the porch of the cottage, known as the Beeches.
Know something, Jimmy boy?
I know lots of things, old girl. What, for instance?
Oh, this. If I were the romantic type, this place would make me go all gooey.
But you're not?
No, I'm not. All your misconceptions of women notwithstanding.
Then you want to waste all this moonlight and romance?
Oh, come, darling. If you must whisper sweet nothings, come and whisper them.
Why not out here?
Because I don't feel comfortable on the shale. Come on now.
Always let the woman have her way, particularly after she's cooked a beautiful dinner.
Here now. I'm the only beautiful thing around here. What a way you have. In here, darling.
No, not in there. It's a spare room, not made up.
I want to see it.
Oh, nothing in there.
Why, are you going to deny me anything, darling?
It's locked.
Oh, Jimmy.
No.
Say, what are you? Bluebeard or something?
Maybe I am.
The door stayed locked. The weekend at Pevensey Bay was quite successful. But now, the scene changes to a London street, lined with somewhat shabby buildings, which house somewhat shabby offices. Into one of those buildings, a woman hurries, almost furtively. She climbs the stairs, one flight, walks into an office, door of which announces in gold lettering, Cross Detective Agency.
You are Mr. Cross?
I am. What can I do for you, Mrs.?
My ring.
Yes, an old trick. Sit down, won't you?
Thank you. My name is Lillian Hudson. Mrs. Lillian Hudson.
I see. Well, how can I help you?
I want some information on my husband, James Hudson.
Go on, please.
I saw your advertisement. Were you formerly with Scotland Yard?
I was. Advancement seems slow. I'm working for myself now.
Yes. Well, I have reason to believe that my husband has been, well, seeing other women.
And you want me to get the evidence?
I think so.
A divorce action?
Perhaps. It depends on the results.
And you want to stay in the background?
For the present.
Hmm. Well, have you anything on which I can start? An address? A lead of any kind?
I have this.
A baggage check. Waterloo Station baggage storage. Stamp 10 a.m. Friday, April 16th. An innocent bit of pasteboard.
Where did you get this, Mrs. Hudson?
I took one of my husband's suits to the cleaner. This was in a pocket. The cleaner gave it to me.
Oh, and why should this mean anything?
Because Jim, my husband, was away the entire week of the 12th until the morning of the 19th. It came to me, if he had told the truth, how could he have checked something at Waterloo on the 16th if he were out of town all that week?
An interesting observation, Mrs. Hudson. Well, suppose I go over to Waterloo Station and pick up whatever was checked there. Oh, and sorry to mention this, but it is customary to have a retainer, you know?
Private Detective Cross, once of Scotland Yard, went on over to Waterloo Station, presented the baggage check. A short while later, he arrived in the office of Inspector Henley at the Yard.
Oh, yes, Cross. I remember you now.
Ah, thank you, Inspector.
You were with us once, weren't you?
Yes, sir.
You know, there are times, Cross, when I wish I had the gumption to strike out on my own. Too late now, however.
And there are times, Inspector, when I wish I had stayed on here. However...
Yes, to each his own, and the grass is always greener, and so on. Well, Sergeant Anderson said you wanted to show me something.
Oh, yeah, this, sir. This Gladstone bag.
Looks perfectly normal. Locked, I see.
Yes, if you look inside, Inspector, just pry the two halves apart at one end, as I did.
Yes, I see. Oh, odd objects to have in a valise.
Not if one had every intention of disposing of them, Inspector.
You're probably right about that. Seems like some silk or something. And badly stained.
If I were a gambling man, I'd give 10 to 1 the stains are blood, sir. And it wouldn't be much of a gamble.
Any ideas on what the metal objects are?
Well, I flashed my penlight in there, sir. One is a carving knife, and the other is a carpenter's saw.
I see. How did you come into possession of this bag, Cross?
Mrs. Hudson found the check for it in her husband's pocket. She says the cleaner found it. I doubt that.
Divorce action, I assume.
Correct, sir.
I understand. Well, my suggestion is this. We'll give you another stub. Give it to Mrs. Hudson and have her place it in her husband's pocket. When he comes back with the bag, we'll have a man ready to pick him up. It seems to me this little matter bears further investigation.
So simple, so quietly effective. Just place a check for baggage in a man's pocket when he comes to claim his Gladstone bag.
Yes, sir. Oh, here's my check. It's a brown Gladstone. Left it 3 days ago.
Just a moment, sir. Sergeant Anderson, sir.
Yes?
It's the check you've been waiting for, that fellow there, Whistling.
Thank you. Give him the bag, I'll speak to him.
Yes, that's my bag.
Oh, that'll be 2 and 6, sir, for overtime storage.
Oh, here we are.
Thank you, sir. Glad to oblige.
Excuse me, sir. Are you James Hudson?
That's right. Who are you?
Sergeant Anderson, Scotland Yard. My credentials. If you'd be good enough to come with me.
What for?
Inspector Hendy would like to see you. He's waiting at the police station, just a block or two from the station here.
Well, I've got my bag here. Couldn't it wait tomorrow, or...
That's all right, Mr. Hudson. I'll carry your bag.
The squad room at the police station near Waterloo was very quiet. Inspector Henley sat behind a battered desk. On the desk rested the Gladstone bag, open now, and next to it a file. A familiar dossier from the criminal records office.
We have your file as you see, Hudson.
I see.
Theft, burglary, 5 years for criminal assault. Does your wife know about these things, Hudson?
No, she doesn't.
I see. Hudson, how do you account for the contents of this bag?
I was butchering half a steer for a friend of mine in the country. He has a deep freeze.
Oh, that's rather thin, Hudson. Did you wear a silk dress size 10 to butcher the steer in?
It was his wife's. I'm having it cleaned at a special place I know of.
Yes, yes, of course. Better try again, Hudson.
There was no answer. There were no further questions. Inspector Henley knew his man. Time ticked away. The clock was quite loud. For an hour it ticked in the silence. Finally, the perspiration beginning to bead his forehead. Jim Hudson began to talk.
All right, Inspector. I'll tell you. I guess I lost my head when she flew at me.
Oh, size 10 and she flew at you, Hudson.
I told her we were through, that I was going back to my wife. She heaved the coal scuttle. Then it was at the beaches at Pevensey Bay on April 13th, sir. She grabbed the poker. I defended myself. We had a devil of a struggle. She fell, struck her head on the andiron. She was dead. I must have gone completely crazy. I went into town, but that knife and the saw, I was afraid to tell anyone. I mean, my record.
Sergeant, I've got something here, Inspector. In this biscuit tin.
Yes, you have. Neat packing job, I must say. Not much left of the poor girl, is there? I want a check of every hardware store in the neighborhood where Hudson lives. Oh, yes, near the railway station. Got that, Sergeant? I want the sales slip on those implements and the clerk who sold them, if possible.
Yes, Inspector, I remember the incident perfectly. The fellow came in whistling, asked about the knives in the window. He bought one, then asked for a small saw. Here's the slip, sir.
Well, this says April the 9th. Hudson claims he didn't buy these things until the 13th.
It was the 9th, Inspector. I'll stake my life on that.
It's no good, Hudson. You bought that knife and that saw on Friday the 9th. You went to Pevensey Bay prepared to do exactly what you did do. If we ever had evidence of premeditation, we've got it now. You're under arrest, charged with willful murder. And I must warn you that anything you say may be used in evidence.
Each clue in its place. The case was complete. Closed as tightly as that same Gladstone bag, which can be found today in the Black Museum.
Orson Welles will be back with you in just a moment.
Oh,
next on an episode of Dimension X, which originally aired on May the 20th of 1950. A shipwrecked crew finds evidence of a long-dead space-traveling civilization. This is based on a short story by Murray Leinster, which was published in Thrilling Wonder Stories in April of 1949.
Adventures in Time and Space, told in future tense.
Dimension X.
When man first crossed the vast distances of outer space to land on strange worlds, he found that someone had been there before him. The ruined canals of Mars, the smashed cities of Titan and Centaurus 2 and 3, all these were evidence that 100,000 years ago, a race of intelligent beings built their cities across the galaxy. They knew space travel, atomic power, astrophysics, and engineering. And then they destroyed themselves. Completely. So that of all the cities on 1,000 worlds, only dust and rubble remained. Why? Why did these beings obliterate all record of themselves? That is the mystery of the lost race. The freighter Carillia, bound out of Earth for Cetus Alpha 2, came into normal flight after 103 days in overdrive. The stars were unfamiliar. The constellations known on Earth had disappeared. But there was a yellow sun off to port, and about it revolved three planets.
What do you make of it, Briggs?
It isn't on any of the star charts, Captain Wharton. I checked through. One and three are dead, all right. Have to take a closer look at number two. Turn up the vision scale. Polar ice caps. She's green around the belt. Let's take her down to a 5-mile orbit. Swing around her for a look. Alert for deceleration.
Aye, sir.
Throw in the manuals. Power room.
Power room, aye.
We're going down to have a look at something. Give us just enough power to keep her under control. All right, Briggs. Hang on to your stomach.
You sent for me, Captain Wharton?
Come in, Mr. Howell.
Do you mind if I sit down?
Free fall sickness?
Well, I'm afraid I'm not an old space hand. Oh,
we'll level out in a minute.
Do you want something?
Yes. We come out of overdrive, smack in the middle of a new planetary system. Briggs says it's unreported.
Well, that's rather good news, isn't it?
Depends. Chris reports pretty common. But we'll stake a claim on her, in case there are any mineral discoveries.
Oh, I meant the possibility of archaeological finds.
I'm afraid I'll leave that to you, Mr. Howell. You're the expert.
Coming up five, Captain.
Level off. Hang on, Howell. Power room. Hold her steady, she goes. We'll orbit at slow cruising speed. All right. Clear the scope, Briggs.
Aye, sir.
Nice looking piece of real estate. Well, the space guard requires I check up for radioactives, gold, and lost race rooms.
You're landing?
Landing. I've got a schedule to keep, Mr. Howe. I can't sit down on every lump of dirt I run into. We'll do a spectroscope check, and I figured you'd spot any ruins.
All right. Wait a minute.
Hmm?
There in the lower quadrant.
What?
That bald spot in the vegetation. Those are ruins, all right.
Are you sure, Hal?
Yes. I've seen the lost race rubble on Centaurus 2. There. You can see it plainly. Dust and rubble.
No, that's what I get for calling in an expert. Briggs, stand by to take it down to 5,000 feet.
Aye, sir.
All this stinking luck. There goes my schedule. Seen enough, Howell? This is going to set me back 5 hours.
Interesting. Wait a minute.
What's wrong?
I don't believe it. Marvelous. Incredible.
Stop sputtering, Howell. What is it?
Look over that rise in the ground. It's a section of the city still standing.
Hey, you're right.
That hill must have shielded it from the blast. Captain, you've got to land.
Land?
You've got to. This is the first lost race site that's ever been spotted. Of course you'll land.
Howell, we get a $1,000 bonus for every day under par for the run.
But you don't understand. It's the biggest find in the century.
We can chart it, and you'll have to get back somehow. That's all. I'm not sitting down to rake over old dust heaps.
Captain Wharton, I'm on commission to the Space Guard. You may have to answer to them.
I'll think up one. Look, Howell. It's Strictly speaking, you're a passenger.
Well, you've got to
you
land.
You don't belong on the bridge. I'm not landing down there. I'm landing.
Briggs!
Emergency from the power room. Something must have blown.
Power room. Power room. Danton, what's wrong down there? Danton! Oh, he doesn't answer.
Anything serious, Captain?
Reaches the fuel locker. That 5 pounds of descending will go and kick us right out of space. Danton! Danton!
Power room, aye.
What happened? What blew?
Main tube coupling. She's secured
what's
now.
What's the damage?
The main tube's burnt out. Bearing, the coupling, injector valve, and the needle gauge.
Can you make repairs?
Not in flight.
Can you raise enough power to land?
I don't know, Captain. The wiring's shot. He's fat like a tomcat. I might be able to get something from the deceleration auxiliaries.
Get a jury rig on her. We'll try to set her down.
Aye, sir.
Briggs.
Yes, sir.
Alert for crash landing. Signal room. Signal room.
Signal, aye.
Langston, get off a position fix and SOS standby.
Aye, sir.
Well, Mr. Howell, I guess you're going to join your friends in the lost race. I just hope it's not permanently. Level off now, Captain. Trim her up a point. That's it.
She's bucking bad.
5 more minutes and the hull plates will shake loose. Power room. Stand by for bow blast on signal.
Power ready.
I'm going to try for that clearing.
Too narrow.
2 to 1 for a dollar. All right. Hang on. Briggs! Briggs! You all right?
I hit my head on the panel.
I seem to be ill. All assembled.
We're down. Guess our luck hasn't run out yet. Calling power room.
Power room, aye.
All right down there?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Danton, I want a complete damage check and repair estimate. Get up here as soon as you got it for me. Briggs, you all right now?
Yes, sir, I guess so.
As soon as we get Dan's report, get a detail aft. Help him with repairs.
Captain Wharton.
What is it, Langston?
My speaker line's out. Sending circuits blew.
Spare tubes?
That was a pretty rough landing, Captain. They're gone. I can't replace them this side of Luna Space Station.
I see. Well, the SOS ought to do it. And the Space Guard monitor reports our position.
They aren't going to, Captain.
Why not?
Sending circuits went out when the blast went off down there. I didn't get the SOS out.
Thank you, Langston. Get back and see what you can salvage.
Aye, sir.
Does that mean bad news?
We were in overdrive, Mr. Howell. It would take 40 years to search the distance we've traveled in one day. Consequently, when a ship doesn't make port and doesn't transmit a position fix, they forget about it.
Oh. I see.
And with the radio out, we blast off on our own power. Or we don't get off.
I got your damage report, Captain.
Well?
Here. It's on a B-23 checklist.
Not bad?
Worse.
Danton, how long will it take you for repairs?
I don't know.
An estimate.
I ain't no gypsy fortune teller.
How about the lifeboat?
For deep space? What are they teaching at Sands Point now? Basket weaving?
Danton,
lifeboat couldn't lift half a light year off this here mud heap.
Danton, I'll take just so much. Look, can it be converted to bisendium drive?
The converter links were mashed when we came down.
How long is it going to take you to repair the main drive?
Look, Captain, I got 2 hands. You want me to hold a lug wrench in my teeth?
See here, Danton.
You stay here, Captain. The whole lousy crew's been spitting all over me ever since we blasted off. Now you can all wait on me.
Who do you think you are, Danton?
The only power man on this ship, that's who. Ain't satisfied with the way I'm working, go hire yourself another boy. The woods are lousy with him. I'll take my own sweet time.
What's the matter with him? Got a bug in his ear?
Space fatigue, Captain. He's been locked up in the power room 4 days.
Oh, we don't have enough trouble. Briggs, remind me to slug the psychotechnician when we get back. Don't tell me nobody gets into deep space who isn't emotionally stable.
What are you going to do about him, Captain?
Nothing. Stay off his back.
Oh, but you can't.
Captain's the only man who can get us out of here. We want to hit the cradle at New York Spaceport again. We've got to keep him happy.
Captain Wharton, as long as we're landed and we do have to wait for the engines to be fixed, I suppose we can explore the lost race ruins.
Look, Mr. Howell, I can't spare the men. We are now stuck tight. Until Danton gets those engines fixed. And if he can't, which is entirely possible, we are stuck, period.
Oh.
Briggs, I want you to keep a careful eye on the men. Space fatigue is nothing compared to what we might run up against now.
Captain Wharton, Captain, I've got it.
The sending circuits?
No, sir, but I picked up the incoming video band.
Well, that's something. Can you get the mail call through? A man could use a little lift right now.
Well, the scheduled one-way personals are due at 2330 Greenwich.
Good. That ought to help morale. Langston, rig the receiving booth.
Aye, sir.
Powell, this is a break. Seeing the folks at home may be enough to keep everybody on an even keel. I know I'll be glad to see that kid of mine.
Mr. Langston, get Hanson out of the booth. You wear the glass right off the tooth.
Ah, take it easy, Williams. Everybody gets 3 minutes.
Hey, Kelly, I bet that dame of yours burned up the circuits, huh?
How'd you know it was his girl? You can't tell through the booth.
Well, who else would call that ape? What'd you say, Kelly?
Oh, nothing. She don't have to. She just stands in front of the pickup tube and... Oh, brother!
I can just see that.
Hey, it's a boy!
A boy!
Alice had a boy! What? They're gonna show him to me in the circuit tomorrow.
Congratulations! Come on,
who's next, Mr. Langston?
The last call's coming through now on ticker. It's for Williams.
Well, hey, wait a minute, Williams.
Hey, let go of my arm.
What happened to my call?
No call today, Dan.
You're a liar, Langston.
Hey.
My girl calls on every scheduled circuit. That must be mine.
Let go, Dad. Maybe Janie was busy waiting tables at the lunchroom.
What do you know about her, Hanson?
You kidding? She's a swell kid. Everybody at New York Spaceport knows her.
Yeah, I've seen you hanging around Jane, too.
Now, wait a minute, Dan.
Take it easy, Dan.
You and Williams made this up between you, didn't you? You're going to take my call, huh, Williams?
You're space happy.
You used to hang around with her before I cut you out.
Now, listen, Dan, you were lucky enough to get her. Let well enough alone.
You bet I got her all right, and you're not going to steal her back. Williams, I'm going to...
Are you crazy? Stanton! Get him off! Get him off!
Hey, what's going on in here?
Let him fight!
I'm going to kill you, you double-crush him!
Let him fight!
My back!
Grab him, Hanson, get
his arm. Oh, me!
Nobody took your car. Calm down, Stanton.
Your picture.
Look out. He's got a wrench.
Stanton!
He's nuts!
Nobody gets a call. Nobody. How do you like that, Williams? You ain't going to hear from Janie no more. How do you like that?
After him. Kelly! Hanson! Airlock. He's left the ship.
Let him go, the jealous screwball.
Sure. But that's the only man who can get us off of here.
I warned you, so help me, Briggs. I warned you to keep an eye on Danton.
Well, I didn't think he'd go off this way.
Well, it's that girl here, sir. He's crazy jealous about her.
Any reason for it, Williams?
No, sir. She's a good kid. Too good for Danton. I guess he's just so afraid of losing her to some other guy. He's getting psychopathic about it.
Well, we've got to get him back. I want every man equipped and ready for search parties immediately.
Aye, sir.
Williams, rig some portable searchlights. And issue hand blasters and radiation tickers. Kelly.
Aye, sir.
You had the second party. If you find Danton, send up a signal flare.
Aye, sir.
Unless we do find him, we'll be on this planet until the next freighter stumbles on us. Maybe 10,000 years from now.
Amazing, Captain. Lost Ray's building's actually standing.
Hey!
What is it?
Oh, it's nothing. It's shadow.
This place gives me the willies.
To be able to find out so much about them, their science, art, what they looked like, perhaps even why they destroyed themselves.
I'm beginning to wonder about that, Howell. You sure they destroyed themselves? Maybe they lost a war to another race.
The winners would have left traces. Genghis Khan, the Mongol emperor, left a pile of skulls as a monument after he destroyed his enemies, but... there's been nothing like that found.
No clues at all,
nothing.
Eh?
When they decided to wipe themselves out, they did a thorough job. But why? That's what we've been asking for 50 years. They want it to end like that.
Captain, there's a rise ahead.
Keep going. Anything on your side, Briggs?
No, sir.
Hanson, what is it?
I don't know, sir. Funny kind of a glow. I guess I shot without thinking.
No, get trigger happy. Howell.
Yes, sir?
Where do you think the light is coming from?
Down there. It's an amphitheater. Stone seats and a hood.
It looks like a band shell. What's up, Captain? Wait a minute. Well, Howell?
No. That's the Lost Race sign on the hood.
The what?
A sort of hieroglyphic. It's the only thing we'd ever found before. One in each ruin.
What does it mean?
Some kind of a warning, I think.
Come on. We're going down there. Careful now. Platform of some kind down there.
Looks like a lecture platform, doesn't it?
Or an altar. This might have been a temple. Perhaps the Lost Race sign had a religious significance.
Looks like a throne to me.
A throne 5 feet high.
Briggs, climb up there. See if there are any controls for this machinery.
Aye, sir.
This wasn't meant for any man to sit on. There's a lever up here. Shall I try it?
Sure, go ahead.
Hey, what the... What's that mist? It's like a steam bath. I wonder if Kelly and Williams ran into anything
Kelly,
like...
Hold that light up.
Shut up and keep looking for Danton.
What? Look there. In the hood. It's Williams and Kelly.
That crazy jet jockey. When I find him, I'm going to beat his brains out.
You could see him. A three-dimensional image.
Some kind of television. Get down, Briggs.
Aye, sir. Did you see it, Skipper? I was just thinking about him, and there he was.
And we all saw it. Out of the way. I'm going to try it. This thing can pick up Earth. It'll replace the receiver Dan smashed. Just throw the lever, eh?
What? That's my son. I'll be darned. His music lesson. Say, it reaches Earth, all right. What? Imagine. Television without a transmitter.
Looks like the lost race was ahead of us in more ways than one.
Go up and try it, Howell.
It's amazing, amazing. Television without a transmitter. This machine may be the clue to the mystery of the lost race. I'll try it.
Mary, I've told you I like my paper first in the morning. What? If that youngster wants to know how the Tigers did, let him wait until I am...
My father in Detroit. Remarkable, Captain. You can see the whole room clearly.
Say, how about me, Captain? Let me get up there. I'd like to see my baby. Alice told me all about it. Out.
What's the matter, Hanson?
I kicked something, a wrench.
Well, hold it up. What? It's Danton's. That means he's been here. We're on his trail, all right. Come on, Howell, let's go.
No, but the baby wouldn't take a minute, Captain.
Later, Hanson. We've got to find Danton first. All right, now, let's get moving. Hold it.
What's that?
The recall flare. Kelly and his men have found Danton. Oh, I hope that crazy fool is in one piece.
We start back now, Captain.
Yes. That came from the ship.
Another flare?
No, that was an explosion. That's all we need now. Something more to happen to the ship. Oh, it's the main jets. Smashed flat.
Of all the stinking rot.
Check through the ship for further damage.
Aye, sir.
Oh, look at those plates. Crumpled like an accordion.
Captain! Oh, Captain!
Here comes Kelly's body.
We got him. We got Danton. Hold it. What happened here?
Somebody blew up the main jets. Danton, do you know anything about this?
No, sir.
Not much, he doesn't. He's crazy enough to blow us all up.
Listen, Hanson, I admit I went off my head tonight, but I'm not crazy enough to commit suicide. The jets of smash were all marooned up the same creek.
I still think he's got something to do with it.
Lay off, Hanson. We found him wandering up in the hills. And he was with us when the blast went off.
Yes, that's right. We saw your recall flare before the explosions. Oh, I guess that puts Danton in the clear.
Well, then who did it, Captain?
I don't know, Howell. Looks like somebody didn't want us to leave this planet. Well, we still got one slim chance left. If we can repair the lifeboat...
Skipper, it's gone.
Gone?
The escape port is open. The boat's missing.
What else?
The arms chest was cleaned out, sir, and the fuel locker was jimmied open. The descendium bars are gone.
You sure?
You look for yourself, sir. She's clean.
I see. There's only one answer left. There's something or somebody out in those ruins trying to get us. Maybe that lost race decided they weren't going to stay lost.
You think some of them may still be alive?
Who else could have blown up our ship? Blaster up, Hal. And be careful. It's a hair trigger.
What are we doing back at the television machine, Captain? I thought we were looking for the lifeboat.
We are. Whoever blew up the ship must be around here. Might as well try to use the machine to track them down.
Yeah. Catch them with their own gadget, huh?
That's right. All right, Hal, you're the expert. Get up there and try to find them.
I hope it works.
Well?
Trying, Captain.
Nothing but mist.
I don't understand it. It reached all the way to Earth before I saw my father in Detroit.
Mary, my paper's all rumpled again.
What?
There it is again. My father in Detroit.
I've told him time and time again I don't like a messy paper.
Look at that. No selector control, yet all the way to Earth. You can see the whole room, the goldfish bowl, the antimacassars on the chairs. Yet we can't pick up something less than a mile away.
Knock it off, Al. We're wasting time. Come on. That gadget won't work. We'll have to comb these rooms inch by inch.
I don't understand.
Neither do I. We'll cut behind the hood here and go on. Briggs, you take the lead with the radiation ticker. We might be able to pick up a reading on where the rocket fuel is hidden.
Aye, sir.
All right, let's go.
Can't can't understand why that machine can pick up Earth and not...
Help, Captain! Briggs, what is it? Captain, help! I'm falling!
It's a cave-in. Hang on, Briggs.
I'm slipping, Captain.
Grab his wrist.
All right.
Now, pull.
Pull.
Higher. What happened?
I was just walking along and the ground caved in.
What? It's some kind of shaft. Hold your light over it, Captain. Oh!
50 feet deep in a stone bottom. I could have split my head open like a grapefruit.
Something down there. Hold that light steady. Amazing. Amazing.
Looks like a pile of bones to me. Two piles.
It may be the first skeletal remains ever found of the lost race. I've got to get down in there.
We haven't got time, Howell. Come on.
Let me have your binoculars. Wonderful. That small skeleton must be an infant. They've been laid out carefully. It's a burial chamber. The way they're lying, it's probably a mother and infant. Yeah? The tail, she's definitely anthropoid.
Howell, you mean apes?
Something like that. Yet they had atomic power and built cities across the galaxy. Amazing.
Howell, we haven't got time.
Hello, that's funny. The little one is different. The caudal bones are different. No tail.
Listen, Howell, what do I care whether they have tails or not? Come on, now.
It's almost as if... Well, they did have atomics, and radiation does funny things to heredity. They had that problem of mutations in Detroit. Detroit! That must be it. What? The new atomics plant at Detroit. They tore down my father's house to make room for it. Quickly, Captain.
Oh, where are you going?
Back to the machine. I've got a theory that may solve the whole mystery of what happened to the lost race.
I don't care what happened to the dead ones, Hal. I want to find the living ones who wrecked my ship.
I think this machine may give us both answers. The house, Detroit, down to the last detail.
Oh, come on, Don. We know all
but
that.
But don't you understand? That house was torn down. I got a letter before we lifted off Earth. It's gone.
But it's on the television machine.
Captain, that machine isn't television. It's a thought projector.
What?
It only mirrors what's in your own mind.
But, Mr. Howell, we saw Earth. It was really there.
But it was just because we imagined it, Briggs. It's a thought projection. I can produce any mental image that occurs to me on this machine. New York, spaceport, a space guard patrol, anything.
Anything?
Yes. And now I think I know what inspired the lost race to do what they did. It was fear. Fear of what was in their own minds. They could all see it with machines like this.
But fear... Fear of what?
They foresaw the future. So they destroyed themselves. Every last one of them.
Hold it, Hal. Are you sure they're all dead?
100,000 years ago.
Then who blew up the ship and stole our lifeboat?
Danton.
Danton? But why?
He was pathologically jealous.
Yes, but blowing up the ship was like committing suicide. He wasn't crazy enough to do that.
The lost race was after they looked at this machine.
You mean Danton did too?
We found his wrench here.
You're right.
He must have looked at the machine and thought it was television. He must have seen all his fears about losing his girl confirmed. That was enough to make him completely unbalanced.
But he was with Kelly when that explosion went off. He's got an ironclad alibi.
No, he hasn't. It wouldn't take a power man long to sneak back to the ship and rig a delayed action fuse.
Howell, we've got to get back to the ship before Danton.
Never mind, Captain. Stay right there.
That's Danton.
In the dark. You make a perfect target there. Stop your gun. I got a blaster set at wide angle.
Drop him. He's got his cold.
I've been following you, Warden. I wanted to tell you. I'm going back to Earth. I got the lifeboat hidden over that rise.
It won't work in deep space.
You believed me when I told you that, didn't you? Well, I've got it fixed. And with that bisendium fuel, it'll be a milk run. I reached the Space Guard station at Volta with a long, sad story about how the rest of you exploded in mid-space.
Danton, that's murder.
Yeah, that's just what it is. And easy, too.
Danton, you can't just leave us here.
Watch me. Sit in front of that machine and watch me. Yeah, I know what it is. I know it's a television without a transmitter. And I did some checking up. I've seen how you were stealing my call, trying to steal my girl.
Danton, you're sick. You
pretty
can't...
Pretty smart, that lost race. They built some machine, and it showed me plenty. It showed me enough to kill you.
Oh, you've got it all wrong. This isn't a television machine.
What are you trying to pull, Warden? I saw it.
Those were your own thoughts, Danton. Those things you saw exist only in your mind.
Shut up before I blast all of you down. You're just trying to lie out of it, that's all. But I know the truth when I see it. And you're going to die.
All right, Danton, but you're not going to get away with it. Look at the machine.
What's that?
The machine. It's the Space Guard patrol, Danton. Look, they're coming.
X-3 to command. Spotted the Corellias, reported, preparing to land.
That's the Space Guard, Danton.
Yeah, whole patrol.
You're lying. They couldn't come. There wasn't any SOS.
X-3 to command, preparing to land. There's a clearing.
That's enough, Howell. All right, Danton. They'll be coming over the horizon.
Drop your gun and give yourself up.
Oh, no. They're not going to catch me. I'll be away in that lifeboat before they land. Stay still, all of you. Stay where you are.
Stanton.
I still got you covered.
Stanton, look out behind you.
Burial shaft. He fell in. Hold the light down, Briggs. Well?
He's dead. Deader than the Lost Race. And what about those Space Guard cruisers?
Out of my head. I just imagined them. There they were on the machine. Poor Danton believed they were real.
I wish they were real so we could get off this planet.
No, it doesn't matter. We know where the lifeboat is now. We can send one man to bring back help. And it won't be Danton.
The machine got him the same way it got the Lost Race. Through fear.
But what was the Lost Race afraid of, Howell?
Changing.
Changing?
Look at those skeletons down there. They had atomic energy, but they couldn't control it. Look, the baby's different from the other. The race was changing by mutation.
Mutation?
Look at those skeletons. Now imagine a shifted hip socket so they could walk upright. The baby was already without a tail.
But Howell, that would mean they were changing into...
Yes, Captain. The Lost Race committed suicide rather than face the fear of seeing their descendants become such horrible creatures as men.
You have just heard another adventure into the unknown world of the future, the world of Dimension X. Tonight's drama was based on the Murray Leinster story, The Lost, and was adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in the cast were Matt Crowley as Captain Wharton, Roger DeCoven as Howell, and Joseph Julian as Danton. Your host was Norman Rose.
Even if you've read a lot of science fiction, you may not know the name of Murray Leinster. Murray Leinster was born William Fitzgerald Jenkins. And, as I said, unless you've read some of the less conspicuous classics of the science fiction field, you may not have heard of Murray Leinster. Leinster wrote and published over 1,500 short stories and articles. There were 14 movie scripts and hundreds of radio scripts and television plays. Leinster published his first science fiction, The Runaway Skyscraper, in the February 22, 1919 issue of Argosy, which was then reprinted in the June 1926 issue of Hugo Grinsback's first science fiction magazine, Amazing Stories. Then, as you may suspect, he died. And that was in 1975. And as far as I can tell, Leinster is no longer in print. Leinster was, I guess actually the operative word is, not was. After all, it's Murray who's dead, not me. Well, I'm not dead yet, and I don't expect to be dead anytime soon. At least I hope not to be dead anytime soon. Anyway, I just wanted to say that Leinster was one of my favorite science fiction writers of the 50s and 60s. That said, it's time to move on to the next show. It's time for Murder at Midnight. I like saying that. I think it's a great title for a series, Murder at Midnight, which was from the Mutual Network and syndicated in 1946. This particular episode is called Nightmare.
Murder at Midnight.
No, Betty, no. Don't make me...
I say yes. It's got to be now and here. She's got to die.
Betty.
I say yes. Here. I'll hold her arm.
All right, Betty, but...
No, 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 don't. No. I don't want to die.
Midnight. The witching hour when the night is darkest. Our fears the strongest. And our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight. When the graves gape open and death strikes. How? You'll learn the answer in just a minute in Nightmare. And now, Murder at Midnight, Tales of Mystery and Terror by radio's Masters of the Macabre. Our story by Joseph Ruskall is one of the most terrifying and fantastic nightmares we've ever heard. Its title, Nightmare.
What do you suppose? It's almost 12 o'clock. I wish you'd let me get some sleep.
Oh, thank heaven. Oh, it was... must have been just a dream. Oh, thank the Lord. Oh, Ernie, it was so real. I dreamed somebody was leaning over me just now with a pillow. Oh, it was horrible. They were trying to smother me to death. And Ernie.
Yeah?
It was you.
What? Oh, that's a beauty. Now, where's the light? Oh, I kissed you back. Why, you poor, foolish little... Come here, Butch. I'll kiss you back.
No, no, don't touch me. Keep away.
Huh? What is this?
That pillow in your hand.
Oh, for crying out, Bells. Can't I even straighten it out?
Sorry, dear. Gee... don't mind me, but that horrible nightmare, it seemed so real. Oh, darling, wasn't that crazy? You, the sweetest, gentlest husband in the world.
Then why?
Oh, Ernie, now please, don't look so hurt.
Now I can't even look hurt. I just murdered my wife in her sleep, didn't I?
No, you were just about to. I mean...
Oh, now what? Everything's happening tonight. Hello. What? Who? Wrong number. And what's more, this is a heck of a time to be ringing. Why, what a nerve. On a night. Thought maybe that was the police you phoned in your dream. Now will you go to sleep?
Ernie Kraft, I'm sure I didn't mean to insinuate anything. I was just telling you my dream. You asked, didn't you?
Oh, you're a character. I guess I'll have to put you in that book I never wrote, too. Well, now what?
That was in it, too.
Huh?
That book you never wrote. You've nagged about it so much, no wonder. Oh, and that look when you bent over me like a madman.
Oh.
Ernie, what on earth do you suppose made me have a nightmare?
That's easy. You would insist on eating hamburgers after the show tonight.
Yes, I did, didn't I, when we got out of the movies. Hamburgers, of course. Ernie, they were part of my dream, too. Hamburgers. Oh. Ernie, stop punching on that pillow, please.
All right. Go ahead, then. Better tell me your dream, all of it. Neither of us will sleep until you do. I'll just light this butt. Now, let's have it. Some gruesome details.
Well, I don't know if I can remember now. It was all so hazy and terrifying.
Well, what happened before I smothered you with a pillow?
A crazy quilt. Something about your job, and I was a millstone around your neck, and hamburgers, and you hated me, and July 15th.
July 15th?
Yes, I can't imagine what that meant.
Look, start at the start. Why did I decide to murder you?
Because of that other woman, your secret love.
Huh?
You promised her you'd kill me tonight when I was asleep.
My secret love?
Yes, she had you in her spell.
Oh, that's kind of bad casting, isn't it, Butch? I'm the dishes and dustpan type, remember? In the 5 years we've been married, have I ever looked at another...
I know. I told you it was a crazy dream.
Maybe you want me to eliminate my one night a week out, too. My Saturday gin rummy with the boys.
Oh, no.
Who was my secret love? Did she have a face?
Well, this is a
silliest part of it, Ernie. It's absolutely ridiculous. It was that girl, Betty Daniels.
Betty Daniels? Who's she?
You remember that tall, dark-haired artist I introduced you to at Cape Cod last summer?
At the
exhibition.
No, I don't... Oh, wait a minute. Trousers, long cigarette holder,
yes.
Very intense.
Yes, very intense.
But what the devil... What was she doing in your dream? We said hello to her, we walked off, and that was that. Casual.
Yes, I know. I hardly remember her myself. I can't imagine why I dreamt of her. Why?
No,
don't touch me. Don't. No. Oh, that dream. That awful dream. So crazy. And yet it seemed to be telling me something, warning me. Strange and weird. You know how dreams are. First thing I remember is Provincetown and us looking at the art exhibition just the way we did last summer. Only now the picture was about 10 feet tall and hanging crooked. And then she came along. Betty Daniels. Just the way she did then.
Hello, Helen.
And I introduced you the same as I did then. Only not exactly the same. Like in a dream. You know, silly. Betty Daniels, this is my husband, Ernest. He is very faithful to me.
How do you do?
How do you do? We've never met.
That's a marvelous Goya painting, Helen, don't you think? Or do you prefer hamburgers?
Well, I...
My wife prefers hamburgers, Miss Daniels.
Oh, I didn't know.
Only after a movie, though. Anyway, I'm sure I can't tell one painting from another. My husband's the art lover in the family, I guess. And I just tag along for the fish. Only I don't like fish. I like hamburgers.
I know. You don't wear trousers like I do. You're fluffy.
Betty and I met on the beach, Ernie. She's a painter. Our rowboats got tangled. That's how we met.
Yes, it was all very casual. I hardly remember.
Well.
Ernie and I are going back to New York today. Isn't that a shame? I wish you two wouldn't stare at each other so.
Well, we better run along, Helen. Lots of packing to do.
Ernie has got to get back to his silly old job. He's a reporter.
A reporter? Shouldn't he write a book he never wrote?
Well, imagine. That's what he always says. Well, goodbye. I'm wondering why I'm thinking of you now. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye. The scenes sort of dissolve into each other. Like a kind of dream movie. And I'm trembling with fright because I have a feeling I know how the plot's going to end. The next thing I remember, Ernie, I'm in a penthouse apartment on Park Avenue. Everything zigzag, even the butler. And I'm the maid, Helen, there. And what I'm doing is turning pages for Betty Daniels while she plays the piano. For you, Ernie. Isn't that crazy? Neither of you hardly notice me at all. And I keep trying to open my mouth. Like that. But it's stuck. And I'm absolutely frozen at what I overhear.
Darling.
Yes, Butch.
Love our loveness.
Out of this world. Ah, this is heaven.
Ernie, do you ever call your wife Butch?
Never. What gave you that idea? I hate the very sight of her.
She's really a little ignoramus.
You're telling me she prefers hamburgers.
Ernie, do you think she suspects yet?
Of course not. She thinks I'm at a gin rummy game.
Darling, you're blind, but she's not. She knows.
She knows? How'd she find out?
You may go, Helen. Helen, do you hear me? Why don't you go? Answer me. Have you lost your tongue?
Oh, well, there's murder in the air.
How'd she find out, Betty? Tell me.
Darling, do you suppose she doesn't know what happened last summer in Provincetown? After we all said goodbye, you came to look for your cigarette lighter. She knew you hadn't lost your lighter, that you'd come back to ask me for my New York telephone number.
She knew?
Of course, intuition. She knows we've been having a secret affair ever since. I can't go on like this. I'm tired of being just a gin rummy excuse. Ernie, if you love me, you'll do what I promised.
But I pity her so.
Don't be a fool. Isn't it her fault you never wrote that book you never wrote?
It's true. She wouldn't let me give up my job. She's a millstone around my neck.
Then get rid of her, Ernie. Get rid of her, and I'll bring your genius to the world. I've plenty of money, and you can give up reporting and write that book. Fulfill your destiny.
Fulfill my destiny. Oh, Betty, you'll help me.
Yes, but only if you forget.
July 15th. You'll forget about July 15th. It won't mean a thing to you from now on.
Not a thing, I promise.
And you'll do away with her. The way I told you.
Yes, like you told me.
The pillow?
The pillow. Don't let her hear.
Just look at her standing there at the piano. You've been spying on us, Helen, haven't you? Haven't you? Answer, have you lost your tongue? Oh, don't try to fool us. We know you're the real Helen and not the maid. She's heard everything you've said, Ernie. So we'll have to kill her now.
Unless she gives me a divorce.
Will you give him a divorce? Answer or we'll finish you right now.
Hey, well.
Here's the pillow, Ernie. Right now. I'll hold her on.
Answer, Helen. Don't make me do it. Answer, Helen. I pity you, but I hate you.
Let her cry. Look at her. Stricken dumb. Her mouth's moving, but she's not saying anything.
What are you trying to say? Helen, please don't make me do it. Will you give me a divorce? Tell me.
Ernie, stop. Fools we are. Do you want her body found here? I'll hang for it.
She's got to die. She's got to.
No, not here. Not like this. There must be some other way. Later tonight, Ernie. After the movies. Hamburgers. She'll get hungry for hamburgers. She's bound to. The waiter will ask her how she wants them. That'll give you the clue. And then, when she's asleep... and they'll find her in her bed. The perfect crime. Don't you see, Ernie? Hamburgers.
A frightened girl reliving a dream that was more terrible than any reality. A dream that could even become more terrible as the clock on the mantel takes on and the hands draw closer to 12 o'clock and...
Murder at midnight.
And now back to Murder at Midnight and Nightmare.
Well, let's hear the rest of this dream of yours, Helen. What happened after that?
Well, it was after that it really got bad. It was so crazy, but so real. I don't know what stopped you, Ernie, kept you from killing me then, but you didn't. And still, I knew you were going to. You dragged me out into the street and then into a movie and then out again. And I looked at you and you were crying because you'd made up your mind to finish me off when we got home.
You should have let me write that book, Helen. You should have.
And I kept crying, I love you, Ernie. Don't kill me. Please don't kill me tonight.
But I've got to. I've got to. I pity you, but I've got to.
And you pulled me along through the streets again. I was terrified. And then I saw a policeman and I cried to him, Officer!
Yes? What is it, lady?
Please save me. My husband here wants to kill me.
Oh, wants to kill you, eh? Why, that's a crime. A felony.
Oh, why are you joking? Don't joke about it. Do something, please. I'm frightened to death.
Don't pay any attention to her, officer. She's dreaming.
I'm not. Don't believe him. He wants to wait till I go to sleep tonight. And then as soon as I fall asleep...
Oh, come now, lady. He wouldn't do it to you in your sleep. Why, you're cute. Not in her sleep now, would you, mister?
Of course not, officer. Not in her sleep. As a matter of fact, we're stopping off first for a hamburger. She's hungry.
No, I'm not. I mean, I am, but I don't dare. I'm starving, but I don't dare. He's just waiting for me to order one, officer, to see what I'll say. And then he'll take me home and kill me.
Oh, lady, stop. Sure, and you're breaking me heart.
Come along, dear.
No, officer, please, protect me. Don't let him take me, please.
Come along, I say. Darling.
And then we were in the little lunchroom in our neighborhood, around the corner from our house, sitting on stools. The counterman came over to us. He winked at you, Ernie, and you winked back at him, and he said...
Evening, folks. What do you have?
You looked at me, but I shook my head. I shook my head, and the tears were streaming down my face.
I tell you what, Joe. Make it 2 hamburgers.
Right. Rare, medium, or well?
Medium, Joe. Make mine medium.
Right. And the little lady?
How do you have yours, Helen? How do you like yours? Make hers medium, too.
2 hamburgers. Medium.
2 medium.
coming out.
And what do you have on them, folks? Relish or onion?
Relish. Make mine with relish, George.
Right. And the little lady?
The man's talking to you, Helen. How'll you have yours? Answer him, I say. Answer him. This is it. How'll you have yours?
Well, I won't tell him. If I do, you'll know how to do it. So I won't tell him. I won't. The next thing I dreamt, we were home again. Sitting in the parlor. Everything exactly the same, Ernie. Just like tonight before we went to bed. But in my dream, I was sitting paralyzed in a cold sweat, waiting for the word. The word from you that meant my death.
Well, Butcher, I guess we better hit the hay. What do you say? What do you say, darling?
No, wait, Ernie, did I tell that counterman how I wanted my hamburger served?
Of course, dear.
What did I say? I can't seem to remember.
I forget to come along to bed.
No, I don't want to go to bed yet. Please don't make me go to bed. I'm scared.
Helen. Come to bed, darling. Like a good little girl.
We went to bed. And then you said...
And now, lights out, eh?
I tried to think of everything I knew to keep awake. I wondered whether I ought to count to 100 or whether counting would put me to sleep. I tried not to count, but I felt myself getting sleepier and sleepier.
Asleep, honey?
I heard, but I pretended not to. I fought to keep my eyes open. I knew I would die if I closed them.
Asleep, Butch?
I didn't answer. I couldn't if I wanted to. I was so scared. And then pretty soon I heard you stirring ever so quietly. And in a moment you were leaning over me. Oh, Ernie, I know it was just a dream, but it was so real. And there was hatred in your eyes, and there was a pillow in your hand, and I knew you were going to do it right then, and I...
Oh, that's a beaut, that's a honey. Oh, my aching back. Darling, when you have a nightmare, you sure do it up golden brown and creepy.
Wasn't it crazy? Oh, darling, wasn't it mad?
Oh, wait till I tell it around the office tomorrow. Oh, this is too good, kid.
But, Ernie, how does a person have a horrible dream like that? What does it mean?
Oh, it's a cinch. I'll interpret it for you. And without a dream book,
you
too.
You will? Well, go on, then, Ernie. Tell me.
Okay, then here it is. First of all, a dream always means the opposite, right? You ever hear that?
Yes, I have. That's right, it does.
Which means I must love you simply awful. Granted?
Granted, silly. But goodness, what about the rest of it?
Easiest thing in the world. Darling, where'd we go tonight?
To a movie.
What kind of a movie?
It was a murder story. Gee, that's right. Do you think that was...
Now, don't interrupt, Butch. Who was starring in the movie?
Betty Davis.
Repeat the first name.
Betty.
And the villainess in the dream, my secret love, the girl we met last summer, was also Betty. Betty Daniels.
Oh!
Well, that gave you Betty on the brain when you went to sleep tonight, and movies and murder, and those hamburgers you did stop to eat after the show wrapped up the whole sequence. And no wonder, they're still lying on my stomach, too.
What was the pillow doing in it?
Sweetness and light, what were you talking about early this evening? That chore you intend to get after someday?
Oh, yes, I've got to stuff the pillows. They're caved in the way the feathers have come out.
Right, that's your pillow you had on the brain, which brings me back to the hamburgers.
Yes, I was going to ask you, I mean, that nonsense of how did I want my hamburgers, what did all that mean, for heaven's sake?
Precious, how did you order your hamburgers done tonight, remember?
No, I can't recall.
Oh, of course you can. Think now. How do you almost always order your hamburgers?
I'm smothered in onions. Oh, Ernie, of course. Smothered in onions. Smother, pillow, smother with a pillow.
Yes, check it.
Oh, my heaven's sakes alive. Oh, my gosh. So that was it. Oh, if that doesn't beat... Ernie, that was wonderful. Really. The way you did that, figured that all out. I think you'd make a terrific detective.
Yeah, so I'm a police reporter. Close enough.
Darling... It's made me think, though, about maybe I have been a little bit selfish.
What do you mean?
Well, that book you always wanted to write. Maybe I ought to
to let you give up your job and try.
Oh, and have us both starve? Nuts. Anyway, in my sane moments, Helen, I've always known the truth. I'm no writer. If I had it in me, it would have come out of me, job or no job.
I could go back to work again, you know. I could take up nursing again. It was pretty hard,
no,
but
no,
I...
No, nonsense. I won't have it. I won't say any more about it, and that's fine. You're a swell guy, though, Butch. To offer to.
Oh, there was one thing more, Ernie.
Hmm? Yeah?
What do you suppose that was... That was all that about July 15th, about you're forgetting July 15th. What did that mean, you know?
Yeah. Don't you?
No, I can't. It does seem familiar, but I can't seem to... Where are you going?
Get something out of my wallet. Wait a minute. What's the date of our anniversary, Helen?
July 15th, of course. Tomorrow. But was that...
Right. You've had that on the brain, too.
Oh!
Here. Little present for you, darling.
Oh, what on earth? Tickets. Two railroad tickets to Montreal.
Right again. We're taking an anniversary trip. I wanted to surprise you when you woke up, but... anyway, happy anniversary, baby.
Oh, Ernie. Oh, you great big precious darling. How can I ever... You... Didn't forget. You always did before, but this time you didn't. Oh, Ernie, I just can't stand it. First that dream and then finding out that it did mean just the opposite.
No, Helen, don't.
It's so sweet of you. I'm so thrilled. Montreal, where we had our honeymoon, and you haven't forgotten. Oh, Ernie, I do hope I've been a good wife to you. And if there's anything I ever... I mean, if you want me to, I can always change.
Oh, darling, I wouldn't want you any different for the world. I want you to stay just the same sweet little girl I married. And now, let's get some shut-eye, huh? Lights out?
All right. And I'm going to put the tickets right here under the pillow. And have a happy dream for a change.
Ah, good night, Butch.
You haven't kissed me? Good night, dear.
Asleep, darling. Darling, are you asleep? Hello?
Ernie?
You shouldn't have phoned before, Betty. She was still awake.
I had to know. Is it done?
Not yet.
You got the tickets?
Yes.
It has to be tonight. You promised.
I know.
Is she asleep now?
Yes. Just gone off.
Then what are you waiting for?
Nothing. I'll do it now. Right now. As soon as I hang up.
Putting down the phone, Ernie turns and picks the pillow off his bed as the clock finishes striking 12.
Murder at midnight.
Remember to be with us again when death appears out of the darkness, wearing the face of one you know, and the clocks strike 12 for...
Murder at midnight.
The part of Helen was played by Elspeth Eric. Walter Vaughn was Ernie. With music by Charles Paul, Murder at Midnight was directed by Anton M. Leder. Thank you.
another night transmissions is in the can. That's 2 hours of your life you'll never get back. I hope you don't want it back. It seems to me like this has been a pretty pleasant way to spend a couple hours. Besides, if you do want it back, well, I ain't got it. This is Gary Clinton. And as always, you can write me at nighttransmissions@gmail.com. That's nighttransmissions, one word, no space between the night and the transmissions, @gmail.com. And as usual, we're closing out with Billy May and his orchestra playing Rhapsody in Blue. Good night. Good morning. See you next week.